Newsmakers is made possible by the generosity of listeners like you, including the Illiopian Oracles. I'm Gary Moore. On today's program,
there's nothing that comes close to a more critical time in terms of voting than we are facing right now. You know, black people in this country have a target on them right now.
Legal expert and WPNV contributor Raymond Pierce talks about the importance of next year's general election and the legal challenges facing the notoriously popular GOP frontrunner, Donald Trump. It's been a while since I spoke with you. A lot has happened. I think the last time we talked, we were speculating on when the other shoe would drop relative to the Fulton County case against former President Trump. It has dropped. And we are learning today that the grand jury that was convened originally recommended that some other people be indicted. And they included people like Senator Lindsey Graham. What are your thoughts on the scope of the grand jury's recommendation and how we ended up with the 19 people who were eventually indicted?
Well, one, you may recall that there were many news reports around the time of the infamous call to Secretary of State Ratzenberger, to find the votes needed to swing the election to former President Donald Trump. You may recall that at that time there were many news reports that of Senator Lindsey Graham from South Carolina calling it, making several calls into the state of Georgia, inquiring and cajoling and probing around the Georgia election for president. And I think many people thought then that was inappropriate, and members of the news media were saying the same thing, that was inappropriate. So it does not surprise me that the grand jury recommended an indictment. In fact, I think many people thought that when the indictments were handed down of the 19th, that Lindsey Graham was not in there. So obviously, the prosecutor took some discretion in terms of looking at the recommendations from the grand jury and picking those that she felt she had the strongest case. So, yes, the grand jury may have recommended indictments against additional persons who had some involvement in overturning the Georgia election. But apparently, in the discretion of the prosecutor, the district attorney, Fannie Willis, she only picked 19, for which she probably feels, I'm pretty sure, she had the strongest case.
There's been a lot of speculation as to how this case is going to play out. The practicality of it seems like something no one can even imagine. 19 people on trial at the same time, 100 plus witnesses being called and recalled for each trial. You had talked about the possibility of maybe some people making plea deals, and by the time this went to trial, you wouldn't have 19 necessarily, but maybe 5 or 6, including the former president. How do you see this playing out? And did Fannie Willis, the district attorney, bite off more than what she could chew?
No, I don't think the district attorney bit off more than she could chew. I think she's doing what any prosecutor, a wise prosecutor, would do in a situation like this, and that is play the defendants against one another. Sure, she's going to say, I plan on trying all 19 of them at the same time. And she'll take that up to the 11th hour with the idea that some of those folks will flip on others. Either way, the judge is not going to allow that. The judge has control over the docket. The judge has control over the trying of the case. The judge is not going to let 19 cases be tried at the same time. So she's going to end up breaking that up, delaying others, or separating a few. But it's very likely some of the minions there, when I say minions, I mean some smaller players in this sad story, are going to flip. They don't have the money, for the attorneys. They're smart. They've got people talking to them, friends and family, saying, hey, you're in trouble here. You need to, cooperate. So there's no way in the world that District Attorney Fannie Willis, no matter how sharp, professional, prepared she may be, is even thinking about going forward with 19. I think it's strategic. I think it's wise strategy on her part to use that statement to create pressure on the defendants that would ultimately strengthen her case against the major players in this case of racketeering.
Mark Meadows is one of the defendants who is seeking to have his case moved to federal court, and some legal analysts have said that he has a pretty good chance of it being moved. Explain how and why he would seek that for our listeners.
Well, Gary, within the last hour and a half, 2 hours, the judge did rule. Federal judge, God, I think it's federal district court judge in Georgia, ruled against Mark Meadows' motion. The case is not going to be moved. So that's breaking news. I'm not surprised. The former chief of staff's argument was that his actions in Georgia were related with his official duties as White House chief of staff. And the court just, ruled today within the last hour and a half that no, his actions were related more to the campaign, the re-election campaign, and were not the actions of a federal officer conducting his or her duty. So Mark Meadows has lost. Now, the judge did say in his opinion that the ruling on Mark Meadows' motion for removal has no bearing on the others, because there are others who have also filed to have the case removed. And, of course, Donald Trump has indicated that he may request his case be removed from state court to federal court. But I doubt very seriously if he is now going to be able to argue that his actions, his phone calls, or his involvement in Georgia were part of his duties as chief executive of the United States, since the court has just ruled that the chief of staff of federal officers' actions were not on behalf of the federal government boards, instead on behalf of the campaign. Now, others who have filed those motions, I think there might be four or five others who have filed motions, will have a different claim because they were not federal officers. So I don't know the grounds upon which they are requesting that their case be removed from state court and placed in federal court. It can't be because they were a federal official, as Mark Meadows argued unsuccessfully. So I'm curious as to, I guess I should know that, what were the grounds of their motions for removal. But we'll see. But yes, the federal court ruled against Mark Meadows.
The former president has gained popularity since his indictment. I think he was even so bold to say that all he needed was another indictment to ensure that he would win the Republican nomination for president. And we are facing the weird possibility that you have the Republican nominee on trial for, lack of a better word, treason, with the possibility that he could win, and if so, could end up pardoning himself. Help us understand the weirdness of this, because I don't think we can impress upon our listeners enough these strange, bizarre times that we're living in. This is a context that we've never seen before.
Well, I personally believe, Gary, that it is a sad commentary on the de-evolution of a certain segment of America's concept of reality, which plays into the hands of a former reality TV star. Donald Trump may not have been much of a president, but he understands the psychology of that population of people, which is very large in this country, if not the world, who are attentive. I hate to use the term, but I'm just going to say it. I hate to say this, but a certain intellectual laziness about themselves. They do do not dig into the facts and do not, you know, ask the critical questions. Donald Trump understands that, you know. Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey understood that. They understand, you know, that, you know, there's a certain part of the conscience of America, and it's understandable, roots for the bad guy. You know, wants the bad guy to win, you know. They like Al Capone. They support Johnny Dillinger, Bonnie and Clyde, the bad guys, you know, want to see him get away with it. And so he knew that he was going to gain popularity in that. This is not reality TV. This is not the movie. This is, you know, the democracy of this nation at stake. That's why I was so glad to see yesterday or today, I think it was, all of the presidential centers in this country, with the exception of the Eisenhower Presidential Center, which I'm wondering why they didn't put a statement out, all the presidential centers, including the Reagan Presidential Library, the Nixon Presidential Library, the Kennedy Presidential Library, the Clinton, the Obama, the Bush, both Bush Presidential Libraries, the Hoover, the Roosevelt President, every presidential library in existence issued a joint statement expressing concern for the defense of democracy. Why did they put that out? For the same reason a collection of former defense secretaries of the United States under both Republican and Democrats issued a statement just before the 2020 election stating that the military needs to stay out of elections because of the fear of where Donald Trump has taken this nation. And so I think now is a time, where people, you know, you just can't sit back and hope that the country comes to its common senses. You have to push back. This country has to push back. And if people of a more sound intellect and a more scrutinous mindset can say, hey, look, this is not entertaining. This is not fun. This is real. The foundations of this nation are at risk here. So, yeah, he may have risen in the polls, but I suspect now that you're going to begin to see more and more, you know, people of a like mind standing up against it. I note, too, Gary, that you're beginning to see several state legislatures right now consider actions to bring into reality a little-known piece in the United States Constitution that came out of the Civil War that does not allow anybody, you know, who has committed a crime against the nation, such as insurrection, to run for federal office. And so I can imagine many states will move to have disallow Donald Trump's name from being on the ballot for president. The other side of that is those states most likely to do that are states that he couldn't win anyway. And with the Electoral College the way it is, you know, it's, you know, the winner gets the spoil, so it's, you know, you win, winner takes all. So we'll see. I'm beginning to see a sense of a greater rise and pushback on the wearing away of democratic principles that we've been witnessing here in the last, you know, 4 or 5 years.
You were encouraged to see the members of the Proud Boys sentenced. I believe the leader, Enrique Tarrio, was sentenced to something like 22 years in prison.
Yeah.
And I think one of the significant things about that particular case was that he was not present during the January 6, 2021 attempted coup, the insurrection. But even though he was not present, he still received the longest sentence.
And I believe also one of the founders and leaders of the Oath Keepers, actually a very well-educated gentleman who was, you know, leader of the Oath Keepers. I'm very happy, as I imagine others, not only of their conviction, but of their sentencing. I mean, this was an insurrection. This was not a protest. This was an attempt to thwart, you know, the peaceful transfer of power in the United States, which is a very fragile democracy based on faith and trust. And so if people were breaking the United States Capitol for the purpose of disrupting, you know, the counting certification of the Electoral College for the presidency, shouting, you know, hang the vice president and this, you know, and do harm to the Speaker of the House at that time, Nancy Pelosi, you can't have that. So people who had any involvement with that have to be tried. And if convicted, they have to do serious time. They have to set an example for this. Now, Enrique Tarrio, the gentleman who, you know, got the most time, he was not in Washington, D.C. at the time because he could not be in Washington, D.C. at the time because he had already been, he had a restraining order for him. The city of Washington, D.C. had banned him from the city because of his prior acts of plotting and planning against the federal government. And so he couldn't be in town because he had a warrant out. If he didn't have a warrant out for him, but he was likely to be arrested. Meanwhile, the FBI had taps of this guy, and they, you know, they had more than enough evidence to find him guilty of masterminding that entire insurrection. So yes, he got the most time. He had the loudest mouth, and he's going to go to federal prison for a long time. And and as you said, I'm glad to see that. Not because of, you know, any animus against the gentleman, but for the good of the country.
We want to remind our listeners, this is Newsmakers on WPNV. Newsmakers is brought to you by the generosity of listeners like you, including the Illiapian Oracle Group and Pam Adams. We're talking with Raymond Pierce, who is the head of the Southern Education Foundation, and our WPNV legal contributor. We're talking, of course, about the recent developments in the various cases against former President Donald Trump. And when we talked last time, you expressed some concern about the climate in our country. You alluded to it earlier about these people at the Capitol shouting, "Hang Mike Pence," and this type of thing. And we were talking earlier about Trump's popularity in the polls, and you mentioned this intellectual laziness. You were concerned about the racial climate in that the former president, over the course of the last 6 or 7 years, has been fomenting discord, pitting people against each other, massaging the white conscience to make radical extremists, white supremacists, feel good about themselves to the point where they are bold enough to attack crewmen on a cruise ship trying to get people to move their pontoon boat or to inspire people to walk into a Dollar General and kill black people. How concerned are you that as we go into 2024 and this election, that those kinds of incidents might increase?
Very concerned, Gary. Very concerned. It's a dangerous time, and you know, and it's not just the former president, because I just don't hold out for any measure of responsibility or statesmanship from that man. However, I am bad by the silence of many political leaders, particularly Republican leaders, about this political violence, this culture of political violence that is attached to racial violence and just sheer hatred that feeds, you know, the fears and the anguish and the insecurity of many people, you know, and quite frankly, white people, white America. Not all, but, you know, enough, you know, significant portions of white America. It's really, really concerning. You know, I'm a person who believes in the better angels of ourselves, that this country is one where good will always outdo evil. The world is one where good will outdo evil. But the silence is deafening, and it is you know, crippling, you know, the nation. I mean, I look at just some of the statements that Prosecutor Fannie Willis is receiving. I mean, they're just blatantly racist, you know, misogynist, sexist, and just—it's just sick, you know. And that's just a small fracture of it. So, I'm very, very concerned. And you know, we need, you know, the voices of reason. You know, Gary, years ago, I mean, maybe about 40 years ago, I'll never forget when I was in law school. And I just graduated. I was home for the summer. I could watch TV. Then I didn't watch a lot of TV while I was in law school, but I started watching TV, you know, because I had some time on my hands. And I started seeing some crazy stuff on television. You know, Jerry Springer and Maury Povich and, you know, Geraldo Rivera, where they had television shows where, you know, just, you know, appeal to the prurient interests of humans, you know, just base level stuff, you know, human, you know, just, you know, degradation and just, you know, just the worst of, you know, humanity and you know, hollering and screaming and debasing. And I just said, what is this? I'm on prime time television. I think it's crazy. That was 40 years ago. It has now entered mainstream. This is how we are becoming, and it has become acceptable in the governance of our nation. And obviously, Donald Trump has really brought that forward, and he's of that nature. He is not an intellect. He is not a statesman. He has no love for the country. He's a selfish, failed, you know, business person. And you elected this person to the president. And the question is, how did someone so malicious get elected president of the United States? That's the question the country has got to ask itself. So, yes, I'm a long-winded way of saying, yeah, I am very, very concerned. Very, very, very concerned. This is, you know, racial hatred is the worst of humanity. It has led to the, you know, enslavement of millions of people. And it's a scary time. It's a very, very scary time.
Now, you did have Florida Governor Ron DeSantis speak out against the shooting at the Dollar General. Unfortunately for him, he was booed during his remarks by a lot of black people who were in attendance because they felt that his remarks were hypocritical.
Well, who could be surprised that he'd be booed? I mean, because, you know, he's denouncing the killings in Jacksonville right on the heels of him saying that the obscene enslavement of Africans in America in some way was beneficial for the enslaved. I mean, he said that. He said there was a benefit to it because they learned skills and crafts. I mean, he said this is sick. I mean, it's just sick. Let's not even mention his tacit approval of the removal of African-American history in the K-12 classrooms. So on the heels of that, you know, you're going to have a killing in the state of Jacksonville, which has a very large black population. Where there's an private historical black college there, Edward Waters College, and he's going to come out and say something, you know, against those killings. You know, I mean, who can, what black people in that state could see any ounce of sincerity in that? So, you know, I'm not surprised that he got booed. I don't think he's sincere. You know, I have very little regard for him as a leader. So, no, he could have just kept those comments to himself. He didn't need to go to Jacksonville because, you know, he lacks sincerity.
You have another Republican who gained some notoriety during the debate, and that is Vivek Ramaswamy, who, as you may know, likened a couple of black lawmakers to the leaders of the KKK.
I don't hold a lot of, I don't want to say respect, but I mean, he's naive, he's an amateur, he may have been successful in the business world, I think with the biotech industry, he made a lot of money there, smooth talking, fast talking, obviously a very smart person, you know, but not much on character when it comes, you know, to the seriousness of seeking leadership of the United States of America. Not much on character at all, but actually very low character. It's really, but, you know, he's not the first. I remember, was it Herbert Cain, was it the black guy who ran for Republican nomination with the 999? I mean, you're always going to get, you know, somebody like that, you know, running for the president. So he has every right. He got the petition, so he can run. It's been entertaining. It's not going anywhere. It's not going anywhere. But obviously some of his comments feed to that, once again, you know, shows something you said. That is that, you know, the comfort that people in this country are having now with making racial comments that are animus against people of color.
And since we're running out of time, let's end our discussion talking about people of color, African Americans, the importance of voting in 2024. You and I have talked for years about this voter apathy that we have and how important these elections are these days when there are attempts to roll back many of the hard-fought rights that we achieved during the 60s and 70s and just over the course of our turbulent journey here in America. When you look at the importance of the vote in 2024, what can you say to our listeners?
I've never known a more critical time in my lifetime, Gary. I imagine you feel the same way. I mean, you and I are the same age. I mean, there's nothing that comes close to a more critical time in terms of voting than we are facing right now. Black people in this country have a target on them right now. I mean, this is something that, you know, we were babies at the end of, as Jim Crow was in his last, you know, days. We were babies, when the, you know, the last lynchings were going on in the South. Our parents knew it. Our grandparents were, you know, they had, you know, vivid visions of hatred and animus and violence against black people. They knew it. Lynching was common. Disrespect for black people was common. I mean, heck, you know, the law said if you were black, you could not drink out of that water fountain. You could not go into that library. You know, you could not pump gas from that pump. I mean, there were restrictions against it based on race. You know, we knew about it, you know, from afar, apartheid in South Africa, but this was real in this country in the lifetime of people who are still alive today. And there is a serious movement. There is a serious culture percolating to reestablish that out of fear of the loss of white supremacy. And it has entered politics, and it has gone beyond just banning books by black authors. It is going to get to the point where you don't limit the movement of people based on the color of their skin. So how can we as a people only send 20-25% of our eligible people to the polls to vote? It's just self-destructive. So it's critical. I understand Joe Biden is not exciting anybody. It's not exciting black people, but it's not about Joe Biden. It's about us. And so we just absolutely cannot allow a party that embraces this, that tolerates this hatred against black people, to get anywhere back near the White House, whether it's Nikki Haley or Mike Pence or anybody, because they are all silent on this issue. And if they're silent on this issue, they will abide by it. I mean, they will embrace it. So this is critical. It's a very, very critical moment.
Raymond Pierce, the head of the Southern Education Foundation. I've been asking you a lot of questions. Anything that you wanted to impart that we didn't talk about?
Well, you know, Gary, you know, months ago, remember I told you keep your eye on Fulton County. And so I still say keep your eye on Fulton County. And particularly, take a look at what the district attorney just said in her response to the chair, you know, of the House Judiciary Committee, Representative George out of Ohio. I mean, exceptionally well-written. Constitutionally sound. I mean, she really put this man in his place, you know, in his request for information about her local investigation and prosecution of Donald Trump and others. I mean, he has the audacity to think that a congressman from another state can make inquiry, serious inquiry into a local prosecution, and she really shot him down. If you haven't read that, take a look at that one today, because, you know, her statements, the foundation of her argument against Congressman Jordan, in many respects, goes to the heart of the prosecution of Donald Trump, both at the federal case and at the state case. Just take a look at that.
Raymond Pierce, always a pleasure to talk to you, sir.
Always, Barry. And Gary, congratulations on your book. I look forward to reading it, and I look forward to talking to you again. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Newsmakers is brought to you by the generosity of listeners like you, including the Iliopian Oracle Group, Newsmakers on WPNV. WPNV, we're Peoria's neighborhood voice.